The recall elections for six Republican state senators are coming up on August the 9th. The recalls for two Democratic state senators, August the 16th. We have been hearing from some of the senators and their challengers this week on the Ideas Network, and our series of candidate forums continues in this hour with both candidates from Wisconsin's 32nd Senate District, which includes the cities of La Crosse and Prairie du Chien. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 28th. Republican State Senator Dan Kopanky is first up today, and we invite your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email, talk@wpr.org, and you can also post your question on Facebook, The Joy Cardine Show, or tweet it, twitter.com@Joy Cardine Show. His Democratic challenger is State Representative Jennifer Schilling. She will join us after 7:30 this morning. Let me welcome our first guest, Dan Kopanky, Republican State Senator from La Crosse. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. This recall process this summer in Wisconsin is unprecedented. How do you feel about the fairness or the appropriateness of being one of the six Republican state senators that Democrats want to unseat?
Well, that's the process here in Wisconsin allows for that. I'm certainly willing to stand a recall election for taking one vote that I felt very strongly about as far as the future financial situation of this state. And so I have a message out here about balancing our budget, paying our bills, growing jobs, and providing opportunities for people in Wisconsin, and I'll stand by that. Certainly it wasn't an easy vote, but it was a vote that I felt was necessary due to the again, financial situation that we were facing in January.
Talk about how that vote helped the financial situation of Wisconsin.
Well, as you know, we were facing a $3.6 billion structural deficit in our budget, and something had to be done. And whether I'm talking to Republicans, Democrats, or independents out here, they pretty much agree that we were in a situation where we had to do something. Not certainly everyone agrees that what we did was what they would have done. But at the end of the day, our budget passed. We have a projected surplus in the end of the two-year budget. We're growing jobs here in Wisconsin. Our bond rating has improved. And we paid Minnesota after 7 months. December 1st, 2010, we owed Minnesota about $58.7 million. And we just paid it in the last few days. So that and we had to. Joy, we had to get our fiscal house in order, and we took the extraordinary, necessary steps to do so.
Before I ask this question, I need to again disclose that I am a public employee, an employee of the University of Wisconsin Extension. Why was it necessary to strip public employees, most public employees, of most of their collective bargaining rights to put the state's fiscal house in order?
We have heard from Western Wisconsin school districts and throughout the state where for the first time in some time, some of the school districts were able to shop their health care benefits instead of the traditional carrier that they've had for a number of years. A recent story in a local school district here is that for the first time, again, they were able to shop them, those benefits. The price tag came in $800,000 less than the previous year. And in this particular school district, the teachers now have a group together that is looking at options for next year and the year after, and they're working with the school board on those future benefits. I think that's exactly the way it should work, where school boards and county boards and municipal boards and city councils are working with their employees to provide the best that they can for them based on the restraints that we all face here as far as budgets are concerned.
The recall process started with the budget repair bill and the collective bargaining issue, but it's built up some steam with the full state budget that many on the Democratic side, say does not contain shared sacrifice. That the state budget was balanced on the backs of the working people, while businesses and wealthier people got all sorts of breaks and benefits. What's your response to that?
Well, I've been out here for, actually, this is my fourth year in a row campaigning. In 2008 for the state Senate, 2009 and 10 for the U.S. Congress, and then right now for this recall. And I have been in countless businesses, and let me tell you, they have sacrificed. Businesses have sacrificed, and they've worked with their employees to make sure that they can retain their jobs and still keep their business going forward. And to do that, many, many employees have taken sacrifices. For instance, a young couple in a small community that I talked to the other night, their total benefit package dropped by 30% last year, and their pay, because their jobs were retained, but they had to do something in order to make that happen. So to say that businesses haven't suffered and people haven't suffered outside of the public sector is certainly not an accurate statement whatsoever. As far as taxes in Wisconsin and throughout the nation, we're all very aware that a small percentage of people in Wisconsin pay a large percentage of the income taxes, and same goes for on the national. The last figure I saw nationally was 20% pay 80%. And we know there's a large percentage of people in Wisconsin that pay no taxes. So the burden is out there. We could have gone to higher taxes. We could have gone to property tax increases for everybody to level the playing field. We chose not to do that because of the financial situation that we're in. And even the public employees, for the most part, agree that 5.8% and 12.6% are reasonable, fair numbers when you compare them to what other people are paying and other benefits that people are getting. A small community that I was in the other day, I knocked on the door, and it was a young 25-year-old couple. She's a dental assistant. He works in the construction arena, and you know the troubles they've had for 2 or 3 years now. They have no insurance. They have no pension right now. And so raising property taxes or raising taxes for people like that is a non-starter. It can't happen. Mm-hmm.
And as for the public employee unions who said those concessions were okay, and the increased contributions to health care benefits and pensions were agreed to before the collective bargaining rights were stripped?
Well, you know, and I've many times commended the public employees for stepping up and making that commitment to do that. Out here, though, when I'm meeting with people, I always have some of them coming forward and still saying it's costing me $400 or $500 a month or $6,000 a year or $5,000, whatever that number is. But I do and have commended public employees for that stance. I know that in previous years we've tried to get there, and as you are well aware, that never happened up until the time that we had to do this extraordinary measure. So, again, we could have looked at a lot of different options, Joy, but this is the option that we settled on. And when you look at how this school district in western Wisconsin is working with their employees now to provide even better benefits for them, again, that's the model, that's the template, that's the way it can work. And we just need to get the parties together and move forward in that fashion. And I was on a local town board here as town chair. I know so many school board individuals, elected individuals, whether it be a municipal school board, city government. These people are interested in protecting the taxpayer, providing services to their constituents, and doing the best that they can for their employees. Now, are there bad players out here? Oh, sure. At times there are, and usually they don't last long. They're voted out of office. So I see this working. I see a better relationship, a better partnership that can happen between the various boards, the state government, and the employees.
Our lines are full, so let's take some calls from listeners. This is what this is for. Rose in La Crosse. Hello, Rose.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How do you justify giving more state money to fund private school vouchers for wealthy families while forcing local public schools to cut millions from their budgets?
The only answer I can give you to that is we have a pretty, what I would say, desperate situation in the Milwaukee public school system and the Racine school system. We have to think outside the box. We have to provide an option for those kids who are not making it right now. We have to do something different, and we have to give these young people an opportunity. And if that's a voucher, a system that they can go to another school, I'm all for it. It's all about the kids, and we need to improve their opportunities here in Wisconsin.
We are talking with Dan Kopanky. He is the Republican state senator from La Crosse who represents the 32nd Senate District. He is one of six Republican state senators who are targeted for recall, facing a recall election on August the 9th. His Democratic challenger is Democratic State Representative Jennifer Schilling from La Crosse, and we will hear from her coming up after 7:30. But we will take as many calls as we can for Senator Kopanky for the remainder of this half hour, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Showers and thunderstorms likely in southern Wisconsin. And everywhere else, there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms except the far northwest. Highs today will be in the mid-80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 28th. Our series of candidate forums continues on the Ideas Network today after 4 o'clock. Ben Marins will be talking with the candidates in Wisconsin's 14th Senate District, Republican incumbent Luther Olson, and his Democratic challenger Fred Clark will be on this afternoon between 4 and 5 with Ben Marins. Tomorrow at this time, we are, I know we have Democratic State Senator Jim Holprin confirmed to join us from 7:30 until 8. And we have invited his Republican challenger, Kim Simek, to join us at 7 o'clock. No confirmation yet from her. Right now, talking with Dan Kopanky, Republican state senator from La Crosse, who faces recall on August the 9th. And our next caller for Senator Kopanky is Craig in Onalaska. Hello, Craig.
Good morning. My question is, what is the senator's role in the fake Democrats running in the primary, and wasn't that a complete waste of money and time? If the Republican policies are so good, why didn't we have the election when we should have had it instead of a delay?
Did you have any role in that, Senator Kopanky, recruiting fake Democrats to run in the primaries? And even if you didn't, what do you think about that process?
Well, I appreciate the question, Craig. I had no role. In fact, the matter is I was quoted in one of the radio networks here as saying I'm not thrilled by it. I'll stand election July 12th, August 9th, or whatever date GAB determines it should be held. On the other hand, there was this primary because there's a recall because, again, we go back to one vote that I took. That's why we have all of this. And lastly, I have no authority to go to James Smith or anybody else and tell them they do not have the right and should not put their name on a ballot. I didn't talk to Mr. Smith about this. I stayed out of it. It's none of my business. If he wanted to do it or if six people wanted to do it, then they have that right to do that. We don't want anybody to have that kind of authority and power that they can go and tell somebody that or even ask somebody, you should not put your name on the ballot. That's not the American way.
Our next caller is Brad in Chippewa Falls. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Joy. Hey, Dan.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Brad, with your question.
Okay. Do you have any examples of instances where you didn't vote along party lines on major legislation since Scott Walker took office?
Oh, absolutely. Way back when I first got into office, they had this Tabor legislation, which was going to be to me, a top-down governing of this state, and coming from a local elected official position, I didn't buy into that, not even a little bit, and that was being touted by my party, the Republican Party, and I was one of several Republican senators who went against the grain there and actually stopped it dead in its tracks. Another vote that I took against my party was the gasoline indexing some years later when they wanted to get rid of the gasoline indexing. And I said, okay, you guys want to get rid of it, meaning my party. What's your other option then for revenues for the transportation fund? Because as we know, there had been several raids on that fund, and the fund was not adequate. And so I was one of two Republican senators to vote with the Democrats against removing the indexing. And it did happen, and you know what, where we are with the transportation fund. The Wisconsin university system, when the governor's budget was proposed and it showed that he was going to propose that the UW campus be spun off from the rest of the system, I was one of the first, and not maybe the first, Republican senator that stood up and said, this isn't right. I don't see where this is good. And at the end of the day, it was not spun off. So I can give you several examples where I am an independent. I do vote my district, and I do vote for my people. You can say, well, you took this one vote with the governor. I did take this one vote with the governor, but it was a vote that I took based on the information that I had for the future of all of us here in this great state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
But besides that one vote, there have been other votes since Governor Walker has been in office. Have you gone against the Republican Party in any of those?
There's been again, several times in the budget that I have. The other votes, and we haven't had that much legislation come through right now, but the other piece of legislation, pretty much this spring, I have voted because it's all about, most of it was centered on economic growth, and I'm all about growing jobs and providing opportunities for people in this state.
Gary in La Crosse is our next caller. Hello, Gary.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What would you like to ask?
Okay, I'd like to ask, Senator Kopanicki, you claimed job growth in Wisconsin of 9,500 in June, and you cited the Department of Workforce Development, which at the time that you were citing this, those numbers for June hadn't been out yet. I see they're out now. The 9,500 number seems to have come from the Department of Numbers, which uses the current economic survey, which is information from employers, that includes all sorts of part-time jobs, temporary jobs in the tourism industry and things like that. Their other method of computing job growth is the current population survey, which is actually households who have jobs or have gained or lost jobs. That number is a loss for June of something around 12,000 jobs.
All right, this is getting really complicated, but I guess what you're... are we really creating jobs, Dan Kopanicki?
Well, thank you, Joy. That is a great question. Here's the bottom line on the growth of jobs in Wisconsin, and this can be checked out with the Department of Revenue. From January 1st till first part of June, when the latest estimate was made, revenues projecting going to Madison from taxes were increased by $636 million from the beginning of the year till, I believe, the beginning of the year or the end of last year till June of this year, $636 million. A large percentage of that was growth in the income tax area. That can only be translated into more jobs, and that's exactly what's happened out there. People can spin all kinds of numbers and get lost in all that minutia. But the bottom line is there is job growth in Wisconsin. It's evident because of the revenues flowing in and the numbers that have been given to us.
Yeah, what's your response, though, that those of those 9,500 jobs in that June report, most of them are tourist jobs, seasonal jobs, not very high-paying jobs?
I understand, Joy, that those numbers are adjusted for seasonal, so it's a job that is a permanent job that's translated into that. Secondly, I don't think anybody should say something negative about job growth in the tourism area. We have a great tourism department here. We have a great state that people want to come to, and we should promote that. And there are some great jobs and opportunities in the tourism industry here in Wisconsin, jobs that maybe start at the bottom of the ladder and you end up somewhat up towards the top. And that's how most areas are. You never start on the top. But we have great opportunities here. We're going to continue to have great opportunities because we're going to promote this great state and ask people from Illinois who come up here regularly, Minnesota, Michigan, and all over the United States, coming to Wisconsin because we have so much to offer. So there's going to be job growth in the tourism area. And I don't think anybody should look at that as a negative.
Marion LaCrosse, go ahead.
Hi, Senator. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask you about your position on family care. Family care is the program that assists low-income elderly people to stay healthy and to stay in their homes. And despite the fact that every partisan and bipartisan and nonpartisan study has shown that it saves $455 per person per month, you voted to support a cap on family care so that now the only way that new elderly, low-income, needy people can get in the program is for someone to die or leave the state. And what that really means is an elderly person has to die for a new elderly person to get those advantages.
Mary, thank you for the call. We have less than 30 seconds, Senator Kopanky, for you to explain that vote.
The best way I can explain it is we were looking in January at a $1.8 billion hole in the Medicaid area. We put $1.3 billion into the budget to cover the Medicaid area. We still have some shortfalls, and the DHS secretary is working on providing services to those people that this lady's talking about. But we have to get our arms around this budget first, and I am very confident that we're going to find out that we can deliver services for these people that are on this list in a much more efficient, cost-effective manner.
Thank you very much for being with us. Dan Kopanky, Republican State Senator from La Crosse. We will speak with his Democratic challenger after the news. Our candidate forum series continues in this half hour with the Democratic challenger in Wisconsin's 32nd State Senate District. And we open the lines now for your questions for State Representative Jennifer Schilling. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Thursday, July the 28th. State Representative Jennifer Schilling is challenging the Republican incumbent state senator in the 32nd State Senate District in the recall election set for August 9th. We just heard from Senator Kopanky in our last half hour. If you missed that interview or any of our candidate interviews, they are archived on our website and on our elections website, wisconsinvote.org. If you have a question for State Representative Jennifer Schilling, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or send us a question via Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Democratic State Representative Jennifer Schilling now joins us from our studios in La Crosse. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Why should voters in the 32nd replace State Senator Dan Kopanky with you?
Well, certainly we are in unprecedented times here with the recall, that this is kind of an unfamiliar environment for both Wisconsinites and for those of us involved in the recall elections. But I think the record that I have serving in the state legislature and the assembly for the last 10 years, people, they know me, they trust me, and they know that I am willing to stand up and represent them in the Capitol. And a lot of the consternation that we are seeing here, and especially here in western Wisconsin, was that voters wanted to hold Senator Kopanky accountable now for his vote earlier this year to strip away 50 years of worker rights here in the state. And I think many people tried to come to the Capitol during that time to contact him and share their stories with him, and many of them felt that he turned his back on them, that they couldn't get through to the office, that the phones were full, emails were not being responded to, that that his office was dark and the door was locked and his staff had been sent home, and that the only way they could communicate with him was through notes to law enforcement at the end of the hallway. And I think people felt very frustrated, and there was really a growing dissatisfaction and disappointment in the current leadership. And so we did not take this lightly, the decision to run in the recall, but I think people understand that I will be there for them. I will stand up for working families, and that I will listen and represent this district, even if it means having to stand up to the governor.
And Senator Kopanky, in her last half hour, did say that he's willing to stand for this recall election and defend what he says was this one vote that he had to do, he says, to put the state's fiscal house in order. Your response to that?
Well, I think this is greater than that one vote. Certainly there were many aspects of that vote, stripping away workers' rights. It was the consolidation of power with the Secretary of Health and Human Services over health care programs. There was the concern about no-bid contracts on power plants here in the state, that there were many different aspects to it. But this is bigger than that, as this has grown throughout the summer, as we've talked about. Now, really, it was the vote in March that was kind of the spark that lit the flame that led to the blaze of recalls across this state. But as I've traveled throughout the 32nd, it's the tone and tenor of Madison right now that people are concerned about. They're concerned about the dysfunction that they are seeing with their elected officials. They're concerned about the budget, where, you know, the talk was shared sacrifice in this budget. And really, the reality does not match the rhetoric. And I think we in Wisconsin, we believe in the promise of a better tomorrow. We believe in shared opportunity. We believe in shared prosperity, but we also believe in shared sacrifice. And I don't think citizens of Wisconsin are seeing that shared sacrifice in this budget, that those who can afford it the least are being asked the most, with the deep cuts to education, the cuts to safety net programs for the disabled, or for low-income people here in Wisconsin, at the same time granting, you know, huge tax breaks to wealthy investors and big corporations here in this state. And I will support investing in our best resources here in the state, which is our people, and, you know, investing in people here in Wisconsin and small businesses over those large corporations. And that shared sacrifice notion, I think people really don't believe in that as they see how things are kind of playing out with this budget.
Yeah. I talked to Senator Kopanky about this issue in our last half hour, and he, paraphrasing him, said that workers in the private sector have sacrificed a lot over this recession, and lost benefits and that sort of thing. So they have sacrificed, and that the corporations and businesses are needed to provide jobs in this state. What's your response to that?
Well, I think part of the concern, too, in the state is that the abrupt way that the collective bargaining was pushed through, and kind of the radical way that it was pushed through, that is upsetting for people, that the concessions had been made, that the unions and those employees said that they would pay more for their health care. They would contribute to their pension. And, public employees have been sacrificing. Teachers, for example, agreed to the QEO back in the 90s, at a time when the economy was booming and people were doing very well, that even at that time that they had agreed to the QEO to limit what they could bargain for. But suddenly, it seemed like the governor would not accept yes for an answer as far as taking those concessions from the unions, and he went even further. And by stripping away other aspects of collective bargaining and allowing people and workers to have a voice on working, conditions and on wages and on hours and safety and training, that I think it's felt that when there is respect at the bargaining table, there is respect at the workplace, in the workplace. And by that just simply went too far. And we are seeing a strong reaction to that with these recalls around the state. And so I think it was greater than saying that some people, have already sacrificed and we need to do more because the business community has sacrificed, that many in the public sector have foregone, increases in salary and had 0% increases. And so, you know, we do need to have that shared sacrifice at a time that we really cannot afford, I think, to be massaging some of the loopholes for these large corporations, really at the expense of some of our small businesses that are already located here in Wisconsin that are the bricks and the mortar of our community and are paying taxes, that the idea of, you know, opening up some of these loopholes so that large corporations can continue to skirt their tax responsibility, I don't think that really is the Wisconsin way.
Do you think that Governor Walker's policies deserve any credit in the June jobs report that says 9,500 jobs were created in Wisconsin in June?
Well, he certainly seemed to immediately take a lot of credit for that, after further review and kind of looking into it, here we have, you know, relatively low unemployment here in the La Crosse area, but still it's, you know, it's gone up 1%. And as you look at those jobs that were created, and it's come out that many of them were seasonal, they're temporary, they don't offer benefits, and they're often at minimum wage or a little over minimum wage. And those are not family sustaining jobs. And while I recognize that tourism is an important part of our state and important part of our economy, but to, you know, base all of the celebration and patting each other on the back over that one aspect, I think, you know, I'd like to see growing jobs that are in the manufacturing or advanced manufacturing area, where we know that these are jobs that will be here year in and year out, that there has some permanency to them, that they offer better wages and benefits to people. So that maybe they don't have to work, you know, two or three of these seasonal jobs that are temporary, and that they could just focus on one full-time job in order to pay the bills.
To the phones now, and calls for State Representative Jennifer Schilling, who is challenging the incumbent Republican State Senator from La Crosse, Dan Kopanky, in the August 9th recall elections. Tim in West Salem joins us first. Hello, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Seasonal jobs are important, especially if you're a young person, and in this recession, a lot of young people have been hurting you just to try to find jobs, and I would just say real quick that those seasonal jobs are important in June and July and August. I wanted to ask, Jennifer, you were a season ticket holder of the La Crosse Loggers, and it was reported that you canceled or don't attend the Loggers anymore. Couldn't we just let baseball be baseball and politics be politics?
Well, truth be told, if I still did hold a season ticket holder, I would not be at many of those games, because I have been out campaigning on crisscrossing the 32nd District day in and day out, so you wouldn't have found me at those games. But that was really a decision that my husband and I made about disposable income, our summer income, or summer cash flow that we have, as far as where we like to spend our discretionary funds. And that was really a decision that we made. And like, you know, all of us are having to tighten our belt, and myself will be contributing more to our health and our pension, that I'm seeing a decrease in our wages in our household as well. And that was a family decision that we made, like, you know, thousands of families across Wisconsin, where they have to tighten their belt and they have to make tough choices about what they're going to do with their discretionary funds.
Is your opponent, Senator Kopanky, still a part owner of that baseball team?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and you're saying it didn't have anything to do with that?
My husband and I have had season tickets since the Loggers first came to La Crosse in 2002, and we have supported that team. And I hope those young men have a positive experience that are there on the baseball team and are helping to further their career. But again, it was a family decision that we made, and I hope that those young men do well as they experience lacrosse and baseball here in Western Wisconsin. But again, it was, you know, something that we decided, and honestly, we would not really have been at very many games this season, because we need to be out shaking hands and talking to people and listening to the concerns of the people of the 32nd.
You know, Tim said he wanted to ask why waste money in a recall election like this. Why not just wait until Dan Kopanky is up for re-election, next year?
Well, it's interesting that the recall election, the 32nd, was the first one that was turned into the Government Accountability Board back in April 1st, I believe. And over 23,000 people signed those recall petitions in less than 30 days, which was record-setting, I think, here in Wisconsin for an immediacy of a recall. And those people wanted accountability to Senator Kopanky for his vote, that they felt that they had been betrayed, that there was growing dissatisfaction and disappointment in his leadership. And I know, you know, last hour that he, you know, identified some areas where he had stood up to the Republican leadership in the past, several years ago, and people just don't see that anymore in him, that they feel that he has changed and that they've been let down. And so it's their constitutional right to recall elected officials, and they felt very strongly about that. I think another question, I think it was if you talk about the expense of things, I think the expense of those sham primaries across the state, that was really underhanded and really a new low in Wisconsin politics to have those fake Democrats or protest candidates run against the legitimate Democratic candidates. And here in western Wisconsin, that cost $117,000 for in the 32nd district. And so I think there are you know, examples of where we have seen probably a misuse of an abuse of the public trust, but a misuse of taxpayer dollars as well.
Jennifer Schilling is with us. She is a Democratic state representative from La Crosse, and she is the Democratic challenger in Wisconsin's 32nd Senate District. She is running against the Republican incumbent State Senator Dan Kopanky from La Crosse, who has been targeted for recall in the August 9th recall elections. There are six Republican state senators who face recall on August the 9th. Two more Democratic state senators face a recall election on August the 16th. We have invited all of the senators and all of their challengers to join us for these candidate forums on the Ideas Network, mornings during the 7 o'clock hour and afternoons during the 4 o'clock hour during At Issue with Ben Marins. You can see a schedule. You can hear the forums already conducted, and lots more information on wisconsinvote.org. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question for State Representative Jennifer Schilling and her race in Wisconsin's 32nd Senate District. Checking the weather forecast for today, showers and thunderstorms likely in southern Wisconsin, a chance elsewhere except in the northwest. Otherwise, cloudy and morning fog. Highs will be in the mid-80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Jennifer Schilling, Democratic State Representative from La Crosse, the Democratic candidate in Wisconsin's 32nd Senate District. And our next caller is Ross in Madison. Hello, Ross.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question, please?
Well, I was just wondering, everybody's talking about how many jobs have been created. How many jobs do you think would have been lost if they wouldn't have voted for that legislation?
All right. Ross wonders if a lot of jobs would have been lost if the budget repair bill and the state budget didn't pass. Jennifer Schilling?
Well, at that time, as we were, you know, developing the budget, and, you know, certainly budgets are about shared sacrifice and about, you know, priorities and choices. And last session, when we had the majority, we passed over 50 different job creation proposals that have helped us create and retain thousands of jobs. And this session, we, you know, are very committed to improving, expanding the programs that have proven to be effective job creators. But I think for me, you know, the benchmark that these job programs that we are developing and pushing forward, that they need to be really performance-based so that there are ways that we can quantify the job creation here in this state, and also look at that these need to be measures that are timely. There needs to be an immediacy. And one of the bills that was put forward earlier this January was a tax credit bill to help businesses, but we already have unused tax credits, like 70-some million unused tax credits in that program, and that additional $25 million would not be accessed until sometime in 2014. And for me, we can't wait that long for job creation. We can't wait that long to help shore up the economy in this state, and workers and employers can't wait that long. And as I travel throughout the 32nd District, you know, I continue to hear that people are unsure about the economy, that they'd like some stability in their jobs, that there is some concern about their job security. And Vernon, the 32nd District is made up of La Crosse County, Vernon, and Crawford, a little bit of Richland, a little bit of Monroe, and certainly kind of La Crosse at a population of 50,000 plus. And then at the other end of the district, we have Prairie du Chien with a population about 5,000, that we need to make sure that we are looking at ways that we can strengthen the industries here in western Wisconsin. We can feed off of the industry that we have. It's mostly a rural district, and so Vernon County is an example, is the 55th county in the nation for ag production. So looking at ways that we can strengthen the ag industry and build off on those jobs through the dairy modernization tax credit, or boosting the food processing modernization tax credit, or the meat processing investment credit. So those are examples of some of the industries we have. You know, obviously healthcare and education are huge over here in western Wisconsin, with our healthcare systems based here in La Crosse, and our institutions of higher education of Western Technical College in the region, UWL and Viterbo. So making sure that the students of today have the training that is necessary to become the employees of tomorrow, and those skills, and helping those dislocated and displaced workers through our technical schools get into those high demand jobs in training, if it's in welding or in healthcare aspects. But we need to be investing in people so that they can turn around and find sustaining employment here in western Wisconsin.
Let me get you to respond to a big issue in these campaigns, and your opponent brought this up in the last half hour, that the collective bargaining changes that were in the budget repair bill have essentially offset the state budget cuts to education. And he cited a western Wisconsin district, it might have been Eau Claire, that now has a $3.5 million projected savings because of this. Aren't those the tools that Governor Walker said were needed?
Well, as I talk to some of the units of government and our school board officials, that wasn't necessarily the tools that they were asking for. That seemed to be more of the tool they were given was something like a hacksaw, that they are concerned about the higher retirement that they are seeing with some of their employees in their school districts. And I think some of the numbers that people are talking about, the savings that are being identified, that's really coming at the expense of those public employees who took those concessions, and so that they will be making more of a contribution towards their health insurance and towards those pensions. And without even when we had collective bargaining in place, these school boards could go out and they could shop around to look for the most competitive bid for health insurance. And for every example that you have of a school district that has switched to a different one and they're seeing those cost savings, and certainly I think everyone is sharpening their pencils at this point to be very competitive, but there are examples of staying with the one that they had, or switching even, that there are examples of, and I know people are fond of beating up on the WEA trust health insurance, and that is kind of has a niche market with school boards and school officials and offering health benefits to that population. But there are some that are switching from something that is a non-WEA trust to a WEA trust for significant cost savings. But I think it is not to be underestimated that many of those cost savings are being realized because of higher contributions by employees.
Thank you very much for being with us. We're out of time. Jennifer Schilling, Democratic State Representative from La Crosse, the Democratic candidate in Wisconsin's 32nd Senate District. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing the hour, and to Chris Molina for on-air production. This is the Ideas Network.